Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
And welcome to Onceable, episode number 75, discussing season 5, episode 6, The Bear and the Bow. My name is Karen, and I will be your host tonight, and I'm joined by Kristen and Laura. Hi, ladies.
Hello.
You can reach us on Twitter at Once Upon News, which is now at Onceable, which matches our podcast, which is very exciting. That was kind of awesome for us. Brittany is in charge of talking to you, so if she's not interacting with you guys enough, just go yell at her, and it'll pop up on her phone, and she'll be forced to talk to you. You can also talk to us on the posts on Hypeable, any of the recaps, any of the features that we do. Just leave a comment and we'll read them, and hopefully we'll start reading feedback for you guys soon. So, instant reactions to The Bear and the Bow. Kristen, what did you think of this episode?
It wasn't like super awesome. Yay, I'm totally on board, but it also was fine. So I'm going to say thumbs sideways. Like, it wasn't really super great for me, but I enjoyed it.
Okay. Laura?
I guess I liked it. It was a thumbs up. It wasn't like my favorite episode ever, but as somebody who has not seen Brave, I really, really like Merida very much. And it was a very, Merida-centric episode. So for me, it was definitely a thumbs up because of that.
Okay, yeah, definite thumbs up for me because I love Merida so much, and she was really present in this episode, which I was thankful for. And even though she unfortunately had to play opposite Rumpel a lot, who is not my favorite character right now and hasn't been for a while, I still really loved her and all of her pizzazz, I guess you can call it. She's pretty fiery, so that was really great. What about favorite quotes, Kristen?
Well, I kind of have two, because I'm going to steal the one that Brittany is not here to share with all of us, so okay. I'm going to read that one first. It's from Regina. It's kind of toward the end, where she says, "I don't believe this. We're getting Merlin's voicemail." Just genius. Like, it was so well delivered, and it's hilarious. But my other favorite line is a little more serious, kind of, maybe. It's just Emma being really dark, and for some reason that just makes me really excited. When Belle said, "Wait, what happens if he can't pull the sword from the stone?" And Emma replies, "Then you'll be sweeping his remains from the floor. You were his maid once." Just burn, man. Like, that, it's just evil Emma at her coldest, and it just, yeah, it was a good line, and I had to get it in there.
That was a low blow, though.
yeah.
Laura, what about you?
It wasn't so much a one line as it was this really cool little exchange right at the beginning of the episode when Merlin is leading the party into the cells to go rescue Lancelot, and then by extension they just kind of rescue Merida, who's there also, and they're going through, and he's zapping guards like out of the way and lighting fires and all kinds of things, and Hook goes, "Not bad for a bloke who just spent the last 1,000 years hiding in a tree." And then Merlin answers, "Just like riding a bike." And then David says, "How do you know what a bike is?" I mean, it was just, I just really laughed. It was a fun way to start the episode. And I really, really liked that little action sequence. I thought it looked pretty cool, actually. Not too like, "Oh, let me take a fake blow at you and throw yourself across the castle." Like, it was pretty good. I really liked it. I thought it was a really sharp opening.
My favorite line is between Merida and Belle, and it's when Merida says, "Well, aren't you the clever one?" And Belle just goes, "I'm glad someone noticed." And this kind of broke the fourth wall for me, because I feel like Belle has been shoved in the background for so long, and which is dumb because she's really well-read and she's really intelligent. And the fact that they're finally bringing that out a bit and Belle just got that line in there was perfect.
I mean, yeah, I liked that Belle had a bigger role in this episode, like just in general, because you're right, she's been shoved in the background for so long that it's just nice to see her doing her thing.
Exactly. Now let's start off in Camelot and Dunbrock. We'll talk about that opening sequence a bit because David and Hook get into some good swordplay, and Merlin just comes in like a bamf. And Brittany really wants us to make sure that we tell everybody how hot Merlin is. And I kind of agree. He's kind of awesome, and he has a nice face.
When you
I
think
like him. He's a
Merlin,
good character. I do like him. He's pretty cool.
yeah, when you think Merlin, you don't think attractive, like younger guy. You think old beardy, sword in the stone guy. So I'm all for this Merlin. He's
Right.
very nice to look at, and Brittany just really likes his face, so I'm on board.
Yeah, and they seem to be borrowing like a certain degree of their Camelot mythology, like not all of it, but it seems like they're picking and choosing items a little bit more out of like the musical Camelot, which was based on the Once and Future King. So, and again, Merlin is older in that, so it is a little, it is sort of interesting to see that they've like discarded part of that. So yeah, very interesting.
And I just think like it makes Merlin more relatable. We don't want to see this ancient wizard who's just gonna kind of stand around and like Dumbledore everybody. We want to see somebody who's young and spry and can do the magic and sort of keep up with everybody else. And I just think it makes it easier to feel for him because he has been stuck in a tree for a really long time, and we know that he lost his love, and I feel like the younger he is, the more audience members are just gonna feel bad for him, I guess. So Merida, in true Merida fashion, once she gets out of her cell, she kind of hangs back with Belle and then knocks Belle out in order to use her knowledge of magic to help her save her brothers. And it didn't surprise me, but I felt really bad for Belle because, like she kind of said later on, why didn't you just ask? But I feel like that's not really Merida's style, and she even says that later on. But what do you guys think of Merida? I know we've said so far that we have pretty much liked her, but is she too fiery? Is she too brusque?
I
I
mean,
go ahead.
considering that she has been surrounded by really obnoxious guys, I mean, just from what you see at the end of the episode with the rival clans, and none of them want her to be queen because of one thing that they think she did wrong, and she's got three brothers, and she had her mother, who we don't know currently what's going on with her mom, I guess, but like she's been surrounded by a lot of burly Scottish men. Like, I expect her to be fiery. Like, I expect her to be like, listen, like I might be a girl, but you're gonna listen to me. And in order to have any sort of say in anything, she's gonna have to be fiery in that situation. So, yeah, no, I like her spunk. I like what Merida stands for.
For
Laura?
me, yeah, for me, she's, again, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't have anything to compare her against. But I feel like at this time last year, I was looking at Frozen, for which I also hadn't seen the movie. And I was a little more up and down and a lot more confused about different elements they brought into that. And I was having trouble following. And I also was not really totally warming up to those characters. I liked Anna a little bit better than I liked Elsa last year, but it wasn't like I really instantaneously like Merida. I'm kind of on board of what she's about. To me, she has like a very clear theme and a very clear story arc. I feel like I know who she is as a character better than I knew who Anna and Ilsa were. So I really am liking it. I am not finding her abrasive, but maybe that's just because I haven't seen the source material, but I really, really like her a lot.
She's very much like that in the movies, so I think they did a great job of keeping her personality intact. Kristen and I were talking about her hair again. We feel like it's calmed down a little bit. I know that was a big thing for you in the beginning. Are you more used to it now? Do you think they've tamed it a little bit, or is it still just too much?
There are, it depends. There are some times that it just really looks like the floor mop dyed orange from hell. And there are other times it's not quite as bad. I guess, like, to me, I mean, I understand they want to have people who are Disney characters to have a certain iconic look. But at the same time, I feel like there's a little bit of give in it. Like, for example, Belle, I like Emily DeRavin is a natural blonde, so she is a brunette in the show, but like, the wig looks a little bit more like natural hair. Like it's not permanently frozen in Belle style, if you know what I mean. Like it moves, it looks like normal person hair. And I feel like to me, I just really wish that hers looked, I mean, it could be like really bushy red hair, which like I've got a whole head of, like not for nothing. I just wish it could be a little more, I don't know, like what someone's natural hair might do. I just like less cartoony. You know what I'm saying? Like there are times that I really feel we're one step away from her being like an anime character.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, like you were saying, that's on purpose to kind of
Right.
make it as close to the cartoon as possible. But I feel like her curls have tamed a little bit, and maybe even the color
Yeah.
has been reined in a little bit, or maybe I'm just getting used to it and my pupils are like
Well,
burned with it now.
it was funny too because and I guess we'll talk about this later too, but there was that scene towards, I guess, towards the endish of the episode where there were like these three guys who were holding her brother hostage, and obviously they must have been people she had encountered before in some way. And one of these dudes had like this ice blonde hair that was poofed up into this sort of arcing hook, and I'm like, that dude kidnapped somebody for real? Like,
Well,
how does his hair not get caught in the shrubbery? Like, I was just like, what?
that's a direct nod to the movie because the three clans have very distinct looks, the other three clans, and the three guys that were standing there at the end are like direct reflections of the three clans' youngest heirs.
So is his clan like the clan of Aquanet? Because like how else did they get his hair like that? I mean, seriously, I was like, whoa.
I can't even tell you, but yeah.
Yeah, it was a little out of control. I was just like, that just so I was like, that's hilarious. So I don't know. That just like I said, it does bug me a little bit. Like I feel like people don't have to be so 100% plastic. I mean, to me, even like Ilsa and Anna had like very sort of classic the way those characters looked in the movie, but it wasn't just so, I don't know, like unnaturally looking to me. I would just I just find it for me it's really hard because Merida is playing frequently against people that it's just their natural look. So when you throw her into a scene with Belle or you throw her into a scene and she's next to Rumple, it just, I don't know, to me I feel like the wig just stands out more and I find it very distracting.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, in a show like Once Upon a Time, which is already extremely ridiculous, you have to suspend your disbelief, but there's only so far you can go. And so that makes a lot of sense. But I guess this is a question for Kristen because I know that you've seen Brave, whereas Laura, you haven't, but there've been quite a few nods to the movie. I mean, of course, you have the title of the episode, but also we saw the witch's hut, we saw her former suitors, guy with the crazy hair, and a couple of the other ones. Her brothers were there, which I really loved seeing her brothers, especially since they were all grown up and all so much taller than her, which was a big change from the movie. How do you think about the casting so far?
I mean, honest to God, it's pretty spot on. I'm pretty sure that the like strapping young guy from the clan with the dark hair, I'm pretty sure he was on a Vampire Diaries episode like a long time ago. So I kept staring at him trying. I was like, is that guy? It's got to be that guy. I think it's that guy. But no, I liked like the nod to the witch's hut. Was an you as a person who's seen the movie, you recognize it and you're like, oh, like yes, like they put it in there, fabulous. Her splitting the arrows Just standing in the woods and Belle's watching her and she's splitting one after another. Like, it's a nice throwback. It just reminds you of exactly what Merida went through in the movie. And, when you see the characters later on, and as Brittany mentioned, the casting is like on point because they did a really good job casting her brothers and the three clans. Like, you get a very distinct feel. You remember what they looked like in the movie, and you're like, yeah, basically that's exactly what you saw. So I think it's a nice little nod. It's just enough to remind you of what Merida's story was in the movie in case you forgot, and kind of give you a little heads up. Maybe they'll throw something else your way later too.
I want to know if the brothers were really triplets, if they were the same person, if they were just three different people, because you didn't see their faces that well. They were sort of covered in hair, and then they kept showing like the back of their heads as we looked at Merida's face. But I'd like to know if we're going to be meeting them up close and personal later on, because I think that would be interesting seeing the triplets grown up.
Okay, so here's the thing. When the brothers were tied to the posts like that, and again, their hair looked like their hair did. Does anybody remember the TV show called The Big Comfy Couch?
Yes.
It was like they tied Major Bedhead to the stake. Like, I was like, I was just not. It was. Yeah, it was that or like Raggedy Andy or something. I don't know. It was a little, I mean, I guess they're all redheads in the thing and that's the point. But I was like, oh my gosh, it just, yeah, it was still kind of distracting for me.
I just kept thinking, which of the Weasleys could they cast
Oh my gosh.
as these guys?
Yes.
That'd
Let's
be
get
very
some
cool.
Weasleys involved. Come on.
But as Brittany says, once is great at casting, but Oaken was still the best from Frozen, which I definitely have to agree with. He was perfect. But moving on with Merida's story, she wants to be turned into a bear in order to change fate, which right off the bat, I was like, did you see how poorly this went for your mother? Like, why do you want to do this? But whatever, she feels like this is what she needs to do. And Belle tricks her and basically forces her to confront her enemies as is, which Merida was like, look, if you could maybe not do that when we're surrounded by our enemies, that would be great. But I think I like what Belle was doing there because even though it kind of forced Merida into a bad situation, Merida definitely knew what she was doing. And it was almost my line, but I really liked the line where she was like, you've seen what I can do with a bow and arrow. What do you think I can do with a sword? And she was just so fierce in that moment. And all of the guys were like, yeah, that's probably a pretty good point.
Yeah, my only problem with that whole interplay was that Belle let her drink the potion in front of them. Granted, it was water, but if they didn't know any better, she got her strength or her ability to shoot the arrow from the potion. Like, I know they know what Merida's capable of, but I wish Belle would have either let her take the potion before they stood up or talked her out of taking it entirely. Because the way it went down, I feel like there's still a little bit of room for them to maneuver and say she had help, which, we know she didn't, but there's still that's the only thing that really bothered me.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And Merida and Belle part ways after, everything's fine. She got her brothers back and the other clans bow down to her, which was really nice to see. But we're still wondering how Merida ended up in Storybrooke. I mean, we know she got captured, but clearly we were thinking that was on her way to saving her brothers, but now we know it was after saving her brothers. So do we have any theories of how she ended up there?
I mean, clearly Emma needed her or thought she could use her bravery because when we first see Merida in Storybrooke, she's tied to the bug, right?
Is she?
I think so. I think the first time we saw her in Storybrooke, she was Emma's prisoner.
I think you're right, actually. Like dark recesses of my mind, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so I mean, possibly Emma made sure that she was brought with the rest of them. That's the only thing I can think of, 'cause as far as we know, she's been left with her clan and is back home now. So unless we find the rest of her clan all of a sudden somewhere in Storybrooke in a hidden part of the forest, like why her? Why nobody else? So maybe somewhere along the way, Emma went and plucked her out and said, "I still need you."
Yeah, they're having a turf war with the merry men in the forest.
I would hope that they would notice a whole bunch of like half-dressed Scottish warriors
In
just hanging
kilts?
out. Yeah, just hanging out in the forest. But maybe not. Storybrooke seems to be bigger than we all think it is, so it's a
Yeah.
possibility. My only thing with that theory is that she didn't realize she needed Rumple to pull the sword out of the stone until later. And so, I mean, Merida definitely could have still been her backup plan, but I don't think she had necessarily come up with a plan to use Rumple and to make him brave until after they had already made it to Storybrooke, right?
True, although we do know coming up that we've got the whole Mulan Red Merida thing, so maybe Merida needs something else and comes back to Camelot. Like maybe
Well,
she has to do something else in the next couple of
And
episodes.
there's still stuff going on with Arthur and Guinevere in both the past and present that is unexplained. So I feel like, there could be something with that too.
Yeah, most
Yeah,
definitely.
definitely. All right, well, switching gears to Storybrooke, and speaking of Merida, Emma commands her to put an arrow through Belle's heart. And as hard as this was to watch, I really liked how they handled it because I was really worried that Belle and everyone else would think Merida was evil. But, as she's firing the shot at Belle, she's like, "I'm really sorry, I can't help it." And I'm glad they just went in that direction because I didn't want Merida to be painted as the bad guy. I wanted them to realize that she was doing this against her will.
Definitely. I mean, that I assumed it would be something like that, like when Hook was kind of forced to do things he didn't want to do, like it was clear that his heart was not in it and that he was being forced to do it by the Dark One. So I was glad that's the route they went here too, 'cause Merida, yeah, she's too good. You can't turn her evil. I would not be okay with that.
And let's talk about the significant death in this episode, which was the teacup. Gold
Oh.
smashed the teacup in order to get out of his bonds. How did we feel about that? Laura, how did you feel?
I liked that. I liked the concept that, well, here's the thing. I do like the fact that he is finally becoming a better person. And I would hate to say it's too late for somebody, because I just feel like that's just such a horrible thing to say. But at the same time, I'm going to have a tremendously difficult time dealing with redeemed Rumple, because I just feel like he's done so much crap to so many people, and he's had so many chances. Like, I'm just waiting for him to screw this one up again too, you know?
Well, I don't think he's going to screw it up because he's not the Dark One anymore. But
Right.
I agree with you that, and I've said this before, I just don't care about Rumple anymore. He's done so many bad things, and I feel like they took the easy way out and they wiped his slate clean by making him stop being the Dark One, whereas
Right.
Regina had to fight for everything good that she's done.
Right. And the whole, like, so the coward stuff, like, I did kind of like that being. I mean, I kind of liked that arc and having him fight for something and to try, like, for him to be the coward. He didn't have to be like, I think that was sort of the point of it, is that he just had to try. He didn't have to, like, when Belle said, "How did you know that was going to work?" And he says, "I didn't." It was just that he had to try, and even if it wasn't successful, he had to just not run away from problems. I think what I would have, I mean, as much as it was great that he was not running away from what was clearly a very physical threat towards Belle, I would like to see him not run away from a more complex emotional problem, because I think we've all seen Emma and Regina be put into positions where the problem was not like a physical problem, but an emotional, mental problem. I would really be more interested in seeing Rumpel overcome something of that nature than just physically, because I think in a sense that kind of problem could be more challenging.
Right. He hasn't had to work very hard to overcome his cowardice. Granted, he did have to work. I mean, he spent most of the episode running away, and eventually when it came down to saving Belle's life, he did what he had to do. But that hurdle is so small compared to the hurdles that he would have had to have gone over had he still been the Dark One, and the hurdles that Regina has gone over, that it just doesn't really mean anything to us anymore.
Well, and it's not as if he gave up being the Dark One. Like, it's not like he gave up the power. It was basically taken from him to save his life. So he has done nothing to earn this second chance that he's got. And that, I think, is what rubs me the wrong way the most. Is, again, Regina's had to work tooth and nail and scrape to get respect out of people. And here we've got Emma trying to turn Rumpel into a hero, and Belle's looking at him with hero eyes, and you're like, he hasn't earned any of this. Do you remember what he did to you last year? Do you remember the fake dagger? Do you remember, you know, like, all the stuff he put you through? It doesn't seem genuine that she can just forgive him for all of it, because now he's not the Dark One anymore.
Exactly. Back to the original question. How did you feel about the teacup breaking?
Ugh, break my heart. You know, I am not a huge Rumpel fan because of all of how far they took it in, you know, last season. But that cup still, it represents so much for the two of them. And if they were ever going to overcome things, you'd hope that that cup was, you know, a symbol for them. And we were so nervous about last week when Merida's flashing it around with her sword in her hand. We were all freaking out. And here it breaks in Rumpel's hands. Like, I feel like there's something incredibly important about that. Like, he is the one who broke it. And so I'm hoping that this is not foreshadowing things to come, but it could possibly mean scary or bad things for Belle. I really hope not.
I mean, if you think about it, that cup represented a slice of Rumpel's humanity. You know, when he was the monster, when he was the beast, that cup kind of held him at bay, and it reminded him of everything that he's had with Belle. He's not the beast anymore. He doesn't really need it. So maybe it was time for the cup to kind of be out of the picture, but it was sad to see anyway.
Yeah, I'm still not betting on it being gone. Like, they kind of yanked it out of obscurity to use it this season, and I'm hoping that somehow we find it whole again somewhere or something, or it gets repaired by someone. I don't know. I don't know if this is goodbye to it, but if it is, I'm still a little sad to see it go.
Who's got the crazy glue?
Yeah, really. Like, just break it out. I'll do it. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll do it. Eddie and Adam, send me the pieces. I'll do it.
Speaking of Belle and Gold's relationship, Brittany says that she thinks the scene in the library was a bit odd. She can't really figure out why, but I think it's because Belle is still very hesitant around Rumpel, which is totally to be expected. And he's just this shell of a man that he used to be. I mean, at least when he was the Dark One, he was confident and he was intelligent. And I think Rumpel's still intelligent, but because he's such a coward now, it just, like, he's just not anywhere near what he used to be. And the fact that he saved her now, I just wonder where, like, how this is going to move their relationship forward, because I don't want it to. I think Belle needs to move on from Rumpel. She deserves so much better. And this is sort of the storyline that I wanted when he was the Dark One. But like we were saying, now that they've just so easily wiped a slate clean, it just doesn't mean anything.
Right, like there was even like a little moment there too between her and Merlin, like where he appreciated her for her brain. Like, when's the last time somebody appreciated Belle for her brain? I mean, I feel like Rumple kind of was appreciating her for her compassion, but I'm not sure for her intelligence and stuff. So I'm not, you know, there are probably Rumple shippers like right now who want to like rip my heart out, but like I feel like he just like there's somebody else for Belle who will appreciate what Belle has to intellectually offer amongst other things.
I mean, just thinking back, the last time I can remember someone truly like counting on Belle was Mulan. Like when they were trying to catch the fire bearded dragon thing, I forget what it was. Like that's the last time I remember Belle's smarts being the thing that saves the day. Like prior to that, she was kind of the holder of Gold's shop, like, but that wasn't really her being intelligent that people were valuing. It was just, I know this thing, or Gold has this thing. Let me point it out to you. Like she was just an instrument of the shop at that point. But like the last time, yeah, that somebody really valued her and her input and what she had to offer, I feel like was probably Mulan.
She's
And now
such a,
Merida.
yeah, and she's such a strong and interesting character. I mean, given the time period that Belle grew up in and everything like that, she was sort of like a rebel. And the fact that they're not drawing on that is just really disappointing. They need to give more credit to the character. So maybe this will just be the beginning of her having more impact on the main storyline, but who knows? Now, to kind of sum up this part of the story, Merida turns into a bear. And as Brittany says, now we know why the arrow CGI was so bad because the budget clearly went to this bear. I thought it looked amazing. I mean, once upon a time standards aren't too high, but this bear looked pretty good.
Yeah, I was impressed with the bear, and you guys did explain to me a little bit about the bear. I guess it was last week after we wrapped our podcast, and I said, "Could somebody explain to me the bear thing?" So I did have a little understanding of the bear routine, but even if I didn't know about what the whole thing was, I thought it seamlessly worked in given the context, and I also thought it really looked good. I agree with you. Like that is definitely some of the best CGI we have had, and it was not a real hokey looking bear. It was a very scary, big, giant bear. I appreciated it.
I also really like that they used the potion that from the movie in a very similar way, but Merida didn't necessarily like expect to turn into a bear. Like the way she was talking with Belle, she was like, it changed his fate. Like we don't, you know, like it's going to change, hopefully it will change my fate, blah blah blah. So I liked that they were willing to use it and it, you know, like open up the possibility of something else. Granted, she ended up just turning into the bear, but I liked that they like teased that maybe this potion doesn't always do the exact same thing, which is you know, could be something that maybe they'll use again at some point. But I liked again, the CGI was great, so I had no qualms about any of that. Although it's the first time I think we've seen brown smoke, right? Like
Yes, I was very interested in this when we watched the episode. I was like, brown smoke monster, haven't seen that color yet.
we've seen purple and green and like silvery white, but no brown.
No brown. Of course, Gold shows up, saves the day, although I will say there's got to be something to the fact that he used magic in order to do so. And I wonder if this is just, you know, that sort of cyclical continuation of his story of relying on magic and feeling like magic is the only answer to his problems.
You know, I didn't even really think about that, but you're right. And magic comes with a price. And did he pay the price? Like, who knows? Like, yeah, that's all. Yeah, something I didn't even think about, but it's totally true. He always seems to be able to find a magical solution, but what happens when he doesn't have magic to use? Like, what happens then?
I don't know. Hopefully he can become the hero that he's meant to be now, although I don't really care.
Hmm.
And it's clear that Belle still cares about him, but I think their relationship at this point is still quite distant. She's been burned a lot by him, and although he came back, and I think that means a lot in her eyes, do you guys see them kind of rekindling the flame at this point, or do you think it's over?
I think this was a nice step. Again, I don't really want to see her back with Rumple because of what happened, but I did see some forgiveness in her eyes. Like, I think this was a long way. He was not going to help her. Like, he had almost made it clear that he was done. He was leaving. She walked away from him. It looked like he was just gonna leave her to her fate. And the fact that he did come back for her, it does mean something to Belle, and she definitely is not done with him. She's not going to cast him aside right now, but you know, it's going to take a lot more, I think, for them to totally mend fences and try and the romantic thing again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I agree with Kristen. I don't particularly want to see the plot line go that way, but I feel that is where they are probably going to write the line. And I would like to see Rumple with somebody besides Belle, and I would like to see Belle with somebody besides Rumple. Like, I feel that maybe now that they're a little more stable and on their own 2 feet, that they will, find somebody else.
Where's Will? Where did he go?
Yeah,
Yeah.
right.
Where is Will Scarlet? Like, come on.
I don't even care if he's back with Belle because I don't think she really cared about him that much, but I just need him back on the show.
Agreed. Totally agreed.
Well, this all comes to a head when, like we said, Rumple saved Belle, and then Rumple confronts Emma and is like, look, stop going after Belle. That's not cool. I'll pull the sword from the stone, but you need to like give and take here. And so Emma actually returns Merida's heart to her chest, which I don't know if she necessarily had a choice, but that kind of surprised me that she did it so quickly, almost like she didn't want to hold on to it anymore. Did anyone else feel that way?
I mean, it does seem, from what we know of the Dark One, they typically are not the act first kind. Like, typically they make someone do their part of the deal first so that if it would be in their best interest to turn the tables, they can. So it did seem a bit odd that she would be the act first type and she gives the heart back before he draws a sword, but I feel like she was backed into a corner. She knew what she needed, and Rumple was driving a hard bargain, so she kind of had to do it. There was something a little off about it, though.
Maybe she's just a bad dark one.
She's just horrible at being evil. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Well, Rumple pulls the sword from the stone. Did you guys expect that to happen? Did you think he'd actually be able to do it, or did you think he was going to be blown to smithereens?
No, I thought he would do it. I definitely did.
I didn't think he was going to be blown to smithereens. I blocked out that that's what happens if you can't pull it out, I guess. I don't know. I just didn't want him to be able to do it, I guess.
Yeah,
And
I will admit a very large part of me was like, please die, please die, please die.
I didn't necessarily want him dead, but I didn't want it to be successful for one reason or another. But it was, and now he has, she's got the sword, and yeah, we'll see what happens now.
Yeah, as Brittany says, he literally drops the mic, aka the sword, at her feet. She's got it now, and I just feel like this is bad news.
Yeah. I'm wondering, since Merlin warned Emma about not pulling the sword, I'm wondering if, since she wasn't the one to pull the sword, whether that has something to do with whatever might be coming. Because clearly he warned her not to pull the sword out of the stone for a specific reason. Like, something is going to happen if Emma pulls the sword. Since Rumple did it, I'm wondering if we're going to get the same result, or whether, because she couldn't do it, an entirely different turn of events is going to take place.
Like she changed fate somehow by having him do it.
Right, like maybe in another version of this, she's the one who has to do the pulling for a different dark one, maybe even him. And since it's not her doing the pulling here because of the darkness, dark one flip, I'm wondering if it will get the same result.
That's interesting.
Something to think about.
Now, yeah, and now Emma, she has this plan that we're still not totally clear on, but somehow it involves Zelina, which I don't know about you guys, but I kind of miss Zelina. We were wondering where she's been for the last couple of episodes, and it was nice to have her sassiness back. I really enjoy her dialogue and everything. And Emma,
Yeah,
bribes
as
her.
Nurse Ratched is bringing her meals, that still bothers
Seriously.
me. It
It
really does. And like green juice, and there's a big glass of like whatever that was on the thing. I don't know. I
wheatgrass,
yeah,
veggie
whatever that
shake, yeah.
was.
I mean, Regina only wants her eating organic, so
Which is a lovely Regina touch.
I mean, she would.
Which
that
her
whole thing
hand
is
is
just
all
still
over that
so
scene.
like perverse. It really is. You know, as she's sitting there reading her little copy of wasn't she reading like how to, what to expect when you're expecting? Wasn't that what she was
Yeah.
reading in the cell? I'm like, this is just too strange.
Yeah. No,
Regina still has that little bit of evil in her.
Yeah, she's gonna make you eat broccoli. She's not giving you onion rings. Deal with it.
But Emma bribes Selena with onion rings, but it doesn't actually work. She wants Selena to use the wand for whatever reason, and Selena's kind of like, maybe not. So, do you guys have any inkling of what Emma's plan could be for all of this? I mean, I'm assuming she potentially has to use the wand to rectify the two pieces, but why can't Emma just do that?
Good
Yeah.
question.
I mean, based on the preview for next week, we know what they need to reunite the two pieces. So maybe she needs the wand to do the same spell to get them back to Camelot.
Maybe. I just keep going with, I think, something that we discussed last week, and that as evil and as manipulative as Rumple was, like we felt like he was eminently sane. Like Zelina is just like this like sociopath. Like I just don't like I have trouble feeling like she's a sane person. Like I don't know why you would want to make a deal with her because you just don't know what she's going to do.
My only guess is that whatever she needs her to do has some consequence that she doesn't want to live with. And if she can convince Zelina to use her magic, then Zelina will have to live with whatever the consequence is, and Emma won't have to deal with it. Because, I mean, basically, any spell you can do, I can do better. Like, Emma's got the magic to do whatever Zelina can do. So the only reason she doesn't do it herself is because something else is involved here.
God, and they say they're not going to do a musical version of Once Upon a Time. It practically writes itself.
You can do it.
Seriously.
Yeah.
But I also think Zelina at this point is basically only living for one thing, and that's her baby, and she's not going to do anything that's going to endanger her baby. So I think Zelina is kind of just kicking back at this point and being like, "You want me to do this? There's probably a good reason why you don't want to do it yourself. I'm out."
Exactly. Yeah. Like Zelina's, she might be psychotic, but she's not stupid. And so she's gonna do what's best for her and what works for her and the kid. If it doesn't have a shiny upside for her, good luck.
Right. Now, in the final moments of this, as we kind of wrap up the storyline, we have, the heroes have the mushroom and they ask Arthur to get in contact with Merlin. And Arthur's like, okay, I can totally do this, but he only spoke to me when I was alone, so you guys gotta leave the room. And I'm like, bad idea, bad idea. I was really hoping Regina would put in like a spy mirror or something and be able to look at him through it, but
Yeah.
she didn't.
I was like, serious, like, come on, dude. Like, that never ends well. Like, You know, I was just like, really, 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 come on. You're a brave prince. You're not going to fall for this. So I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, because, of course, Arthur throws the mushroom in the fire, doesn't want anything to do with it, and says that he couldn't get in contact with them at all. But they have a backup plan, and that backup plan is Henry, although they end up getting Merlin's voicemail. And what Brittany said was, the person you are trying to reach currently has a full inbox and is being detained by the Dark One. If this is an emergency, contact Nimue or hang up and dial 911, which is pretty perfect. And, of course, Nimue is another name for the Lady of the Lake. So that's interesting.
Yeah. I know nothing about Nimue. So next episode will be incredibly interesting, since I think that's the title, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's titled Nimue.
Yeah, so I'm hoping we'll get a few answers, because I don't know much. I thought it was kind of strange that Regina didn't remember that Henry was chosen by Merlin until after they asked Arthur. Like, clearly it's a plot device. They needed Arthur to kind of show his hand. But, like, really, you remember Henry's after you already asked the somewhat twisted, you're not sure of his allegiances guy? Got it. Okay. Like, it kind of bugged me.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that till now, but now it kind of bugs me.
I mean, maybe I can play devil's advocate and debunk my own problem. Did they know in Storybrooke that he's causing trouble? Like, is that only in Camelot that they're on to him, or were they on to him in Storybrooke too? I'm trying to remember.
I think they're still allies with him in Storybrooke.
So maybe this was the inciting incident, and I just am, you know, kind of putting what they know from Camelot on their shoulders in Storybrooke. Like, maybe they didn't realize that he wasn't on the up and up, and now they do. So
the way that they have this season structured, and they've done things like this before with like the missing years and stuff like that with Zelina's plotline, is that when you have the same set of characters having two different types of relationships in two different places at two different times, it gets really confusing in your head, because we're not just talking about like past stuff paralleling with future stuff. We're talking about two parallel relationships, where in one place everybody knows Arthur's evil and they hate him, in the other place, you know, he's still hiding his hand, and I can't remember sometimes what's going on. It's getting really confusing.
Yeah, it especially like costume wise like sometimes it's easy enough when they're in the medieval-y costume versus present day, but like Hook especially, it gets very, because he's like, I still am on a crusade to get Hook new clothes, but like, seriously, this man needs to have new clothes. But yeah, it does, especially with him, get confusing. And then you pull Arthur in, who's in the same costume regardless. Like, yeah, there are a couple times that I'm like, no, wait, which is it here? Like, yeah, I have definitely gotten confused at times.
Especially when they're walking in the woods.
It's yes.
It's like you've got Arthur in his garb in the woods, which could be either place. Where am I? Like, am I in Storybrooke, or am I in Camelot? I'm not entirely sure. You have to wait until you see one of the heroes. It's like, is David in a, you know, in his little doublet or whatever, or is he in a Oxford shirt? Like, that's the giveaway at this point.
Exactly. Well, and Belle too, because I think in real life Emily Duravin is now pregnant. Mm-hmm. Like, you saw a lot in this episode that she was covered up in that big billowy cape thing. Like, I'm just picturing Belle is gonna start, like, I don't feel like they're gonna work her pregnancy into the plot line. Like, it just doesn't seem like that, you know. It made sense.
God, I hope not.
I mean,
one pregnant woman. We don't.
Right. I mean, I think it made a lot of sense to work Ginny Goodwin's pregnancy into the storyline. I think that was a really smart choice on their part, because I think it just fit very naturally. But I'm not sure that.
Oh, but what if they somehow magically transfer Zelina's baby into Belle, and then they can get rid of Zelina?
Do not make me come there and hurt you.
Because then it's Zelina and Robin's love child,
Oh
even
God, I
though
can't
it's not
even.
love. And Belle's, yeah, that's just weird.
Yeah, I just can't even. No, but like I feel like yeah, like so like I think some of this like getting confusion, like they're just gonna keep throwing cloaks and stuff on her or make her carry groceries or stick her behind counters. Like I just feel like, you know, this is gonna be kind of how we're gonna see her shot in episodes coming up because I don't feel like they're gonna work it into the storyline.
She'll
Me
just
neither.
always be carrying one of those giant spell books that covers her
Yes.
entire stomach.
Right.
She will
Yeah.
always be carrying a giant book for a while. It's basically.
Exactly.
I honestly thought they were going to kill her off. I
Well,
thought
I've
that Merida was going to eat her, and then that would have some sort of impact on Rumple for better or for worse, and then they wouldn't have to worry about her being pregnant anymore.
I've been predicting Belle's death for like 3 seasons now, so I don't think I'm allowed to even suggest it anymore.
Okay, so that was basically it for this episode, but one thing I do want to bring up, because I wouldn't be me if I didn't bring it up, is that during the preview for the next episode, somebody mentions Spark from the original Fire, and I would just like to point out that original Fire came from Prometheus and that I still need Hades to come onto the show.
There you go. I also need my little like cookie for the day because I did not know the upcoming episode show titles at all. I tried not to. I tried to do Once Upon a Time, sort of spoiler free. I mean, some little things leak through here and there, but I would say as a generality, I am kind of spoiler free for Once Upon a Time. So I did not know that the upcoming episode's name was Nimue, and I was the one who said, "Well, the one person who was able to bewitch Merlin was Nimue, if we go with the once and future king mythology." And I was like, yay, I got that, because that's going to be a thing coming up next week.
Looks like it, yeah. Sigh.
So I wonder if that means would she have been Merlin's original love?
Well,
'Cause
see, it kind of depends which, like, it's hard because it's like which mythology are we going with? Like, there's a lot of different people who spin different facets of Arthurian legend, so it's kind of, and they're really sort of picking and choosing different things. So it's, and then Once Upon a Time always puts its own spin on, so it's really like where are they going? And then on top of that, the character also, like, they're calling her Nimue, but she could have a lot of different names. Like in some mythologies, she's the Lady of the Lake. She's Vivienne. She's, you know, so I'm not sure where they're going with this. So that's a really hard question to answer.
Yeah, I feel like if she's sort of like an immortal being or something like that, it could play against Merlin, even though the Dark One supposedly killed her. I wonder if maybe instead of killing her, he transformed her, or she died and then she
Yeah.
became something else. It could possibly tie into Greek mythology as well. I mean, there's a lot of different
Yeah, because
like
Nimue
versions of
isn't
those
so much
stories.
in like real mythology his first love so much as she is this being that bewitches Merlin. So it's not, I don't feel like it's really love so much as it's enchantment. So yeah, so who knows? And but it's Once Upon a Time and they always change things around, so who knows?
Exactly. Okay. Anyone have any other things they wanted to talk about?
Nope.
Not
All
that I
right.
can put my finger on.
Oh, wait, just like one little thing. I did like how Henry was like, you know what? Like, Henry is still depressed, little Henry, and I just want to go give Henry a hug, but I did really like how F Henry was able to say, you know, who did that to me? Like somewhere Emma Swan is in there somewhere. Emma Swan is would not have done to me what, you know, this like person who,
Yes.
you know, so he knows that somewhere his mom is in there deep down someplace.
I loved that part because Henry is, in a lot of ways, the heart of the show. He's the one that brought Emma to Storybrooke to begin with. He's the one that a lot of people fight for. He's the reason Regina has turned out the way she is. He's the reason why Emma stuck around for so long. If he loses faith in Emma, The whole show kind of comes crumbling down around everybody. So I'm glad that he was able to distinguish the two. I think that's really important, not only for the show, but just for him as a character, because he has always been the one who's so hopeful and believes the best in everybody. And for him to lose that would just be a tragedy.
Agreed. Yeah, Henry is very much the emotional linchpin. Like, if you pull it, then God knows what comes next.
All right, well, that's it for this episode, and we will see you guys next week for episode 7, Nimue. Until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Boom.